The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
I find that, and you probably know this, lawyers are a little risk adverse.
Yeah, so, tell me about it.
You know, partners are nervous. Like, yeah, it's
well, you got to convince them to jump, right? So it's got to be hard.
I'm never trying to convince someone that they're unhappy, but when someone's unhappy and I feel like it's easily rectifiable, I'm like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. Like they, it's not like that at
every other place, right?
It's different for you.
Right. But some people have this thing in their head where, well, I'm unhappy now. What happens if I'm more unhappy there? And they know what this is. They don't know what that is.
Yeah. So and we actually do a lot of almost like career counseling and coaching, because sometimes people are unhappy in a law firm environment and they'd be better off going in-house or to government or teaching or doing something else.
Right.
And every so often it's somebody who just really doesn't like law and they would be better off finding another career. I have some really good coaches I can recommend for that too. But a lot of times people say to me, oh, well, it's just like this to be a lawyer. You know, they wouldn't pay me this much if it didn't suck all the time. And then they name something that's like so easy to fix. All you have to do is be at a firm where it's not that way. And right. I have to convince them a little bit that you don't need a change in career to be happy, or you just need a new job. You just need right. to be at a different firm that supports you better and offers you the resources that you're looking for.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit BeinhackerLaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Gilman. I run Gilman Strategic Group. I call myself a law firm matchmaker because I help law firm rainmakers who are feeling frustrated and unappreciated find their exact right perfect fit at a new firm where they can feel valued and supported.
All right, Jen. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I know we've spoken about this for a while. You're always busy running all your networking groups. And I told you off the mic, you're really like the queen of networking. I mean, I was a big networker before this, but between you and me, when the pandemic hit, I don't know, I was sitting in my underwear on the couch. I was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And then I get this email from you. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then I didn't even know what Zoom was. And I jumped on Zoom, and then I told you I'm probably in 12 groups that all started because of you. But today's about you. And we want to talk about, you know, like, well, not necessarily where you grew up, but you know, where you went to school, what you studied, because we both went to law school, you practiced for a while, and how you ended up in the recruiting business, really.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me on. I'm glad we finally found a time that worked.
Yeah.
I knew I wanted to go to law school from the time I was a kid. There were a lot of lawyers in my family, and we're always talking about Supreme Court cases and all kinds of stuff. So I was into it from a very young age. So I knew when I went to college that I would be going to law school after, and I could major in anything I wanted because it really wasn't that relevant.
Right.
So I was an English major, so I could read all those great books that I always meant to read, but didn't have time for.
And reading's a good skill for law school. So
So I majored in the Victorian novel, like thousands of books, and I loved it. My final paper was on a Jane Austen book, and I got to sit in the comfy chair in the library and just read and have great discussions in class and avoid taking stats that everybody was talking about or whatever.
Where'd you go to school?
Like, I went to Brandeis.
Oh, sure. Oh, right. You had told me that. Right. So Brandeis is up in Massachusetts, right?
Waltham, Massachusetts, which was kind of a sleepier town and is now part of a tech corridor. So it's very, very busy right now. Actually went back to visit, and there was like a crazy amount of traffic, and it used to be a really sleepy spot. So it's a busy spot now. So I went to NYU for law school, and I started out as a more general litigator. And I thought it seemed kind of exciting that every time I had a case, I was paid to learn something new. I love reading and learning, and it was cool. Like, I'd do an environmental case and then a securities case.
So a lot of it was commercial litigation?
Yeah, I mean, it was business related, but it was a lot of different.
It wasn't personal injury.
No. It was, a business facing law firm.
Right.
And at first that was really fun, but I started thinking like it would be nice to finally be an expert at something and be able to answer somebody's question without doing a whole bunch of research and learning a new area of law.
Yeah.
And so I kind of looked at some trademark IP kind of stuff and employment law as potential avenues. And then I got a job at a well-known employment law firm called Littler Mendelson, and it was a great place to learn employment law. It was, at the time there were like 50 people in New York. Now I think they have a couple hundred.
They were doing more like labor law employment side
their management side employment lawyers. So we were representing the company. Most of what I did was employment related, not traditional labor, but I did a couple of collective bargaining agreement negotiations. And, we sometimes had questions like that, but it was fascinating. It was a lot of like day-to-day advice for very well-meaning employers who
They always have issues with if the company's big enough, there's issues every day they run into. Yeah. Okay.
And now I hear they're really busy with a lot of COVID and return to work and all of that.
Yeah.
So I was very happy there. I actually liked it quite a lot. A lot of recruiters never liked practicing law, and they were always looking for something different. I am a little different because I really enjoyed it. But once I had children, it was a tough schedule. My husband's a lawyer too. And we were living in New Jersey and commuting into New York, and we never saw our first child while she was awake. We were
It's hard. For it.
And yeah. I was looking to find a job in-house in New Jersey, because I thought I'd have a more regular schedule and a shorter commute. And in the process of interviewing for a job at a Japanese pharmaceutical company in New Jersey, I met the guy that I ultimately worked for as a recruiter. He wanted to send me to go to apply for that job. And I said, well, I already had the third round. I'm waiting to see if I get to meet with the GC or not. And he said, hey, my guy didn't make it past the first round. I should have sent you.
And had you networked your way in on your own? Like, you didn't, or were you working with a different recruiter?
I actually was working with a different recruiter who was still a close friend of mine, because she was so great. We became very friendly, and we refer things back and forth to each other now. So Jim said, let's meet together and I'll send you for the next job, because you must interview better than the guy I sent. And the whole lunch, all he was doing was trying to convince me that I should come and be a recruiter with him. And people had asked me that other times, like when other recruiters called me about jobs, they would say, we have an opening here at our place.
Right. And you're like, what?
Love it.
Right. But you never considered it.
I never did, because I liked what I was doing. But at that time, during the downturn in the economy and in 2009, there wasn't so much of the part of my practice that I enjoyed the best, which was the advice and counsel and training and drafting. It was more like they couldn't spend money on proactive things. They could only be reactive when they got sued. They could staff it up. And
that was right after the mortgage collapse, right?
Right. Yeah. So I figured if I couldn't do the part of my practice I really love the best, and doing the other part of it meant I couldn't see my kids, maybe it was time to try recruiting. And he said, just give me 2 weeks. If you don't like it, I promise I'll never bother you again. And it took less than 2 weeks for me to say, you know, this might be a good thing. It never felt like a job. I felt like, right, I was getting paid to make friends and,
yeah,
lunch and talk on the phone.
That's exactly what you get paid for. Yeah. Exactly. Well, that was more than 10 years ago then.
That was well over 10 years ago. That was in 2009.
Yeah.
And I worked for him all the way through the fall of 2018. And then I spun off and opened my own company. We're still in touch and we refer some things back and forth, right, to each other.
So how long were you practicing law then?
12 years.
Okay. And then you worked with him, you kind of learned the business. What made you say, I'm going to be an entrepreneur and start my own agent? I mean, that's basically what you did, right? You went from being
just like you, you know, you call your podcast Accidental Entrepreneur. It was a little bit accidental. I mean, it was definitely, I had a baby and a toddler when I first started working with him. And it was really convenient that somebody else had set up the business and I was paid, right, on commission. So I could choose to work when I wanted to. And if I made a placement, I made money. And if I didn't make a placement, he wasn't paying me anyway. So he,
right, and it's never tied to hours when you're working on commission. You can work, right, very little and make a lot, and work a lot and make very little. So
it was really nice when the kids were younger and there were things at the preschool in the middle of the day, or, you know, sports events or whatever kind of things you have with kids.
Yeah, you were here.
You know, nobody cared if I was doing
that. Your schedule is your own.
Right. So it was very nice. And it was nice that he had all the risk. He paid the rent on the office space and for all the databases and the insurance policies and everything. And, you know, he took a cut of everything I did, but he set up the business and he trained me. But after a while, my kids were getting older and I was working more full time, and I was starting to not really like how we were doing it. We were very much law firm facing. Yeah. And so a law firm would call and say, we need a fourth year real estate associate.
So the law firm was like your client almost.
Yeah. So our job would be to if I got you on the phone and you were a real estate associate, my job was to convince you that you wanted to go and work at that one particular firm. And I would talk to you and hear, maybe that's not the right firm.
Right. Because you weren't representing him. You were representing the firm. Right. Okay.
And so I would get into these long conversations with candidates about what they would really like to do and how I could help them and whatever. And I think the guy I worked for was getting frustrated. And then after a while, I started getting older and the associates we were working with were millennials and they weren't interested in the same things that we were. So like I would find the job that there was one woman who said she wanted to be at a firm that was more prestigious. She wanted to make more money and she liked this one part of her practice and she wanted to do that full time instead of just a little bit. And I found her a job where she was going to make twice as much, right, at a much better firm. And she was going to do 85% of that little narrow specialty that she really wanted.
Okay. Sound like it's fit the bill.
Jumping up and down.
Yeah.
Couldn't wait to call her.
Right.
And all I heard from her was, oh yeah, that's nice.
What?
You know what the gym situation is? Because
at the firm,
I'm taking a spin class, and it's really close to my office, so I fit it in during the day.
Oh my god!
I don't know if it's a good time to leave now. And I was so happy we were on the phone, and she couldn't see my face.
Yeah.
And I was.
Well,
like,
you're busting your ass to get the right job for this woman.
I would have grabbed
pushed her out the window.
And, you know, shaking her really hard. So I just was getting tired of people who didn't want to work hard to get to where they wanted to go. And I started working more and more with partners because they had achieved something that was really admirable. They had become experts in their field and they were, right, good lawyers, but they also, while they were working all those hours to make partner, had managed to bring in their own clients and keep them happy.
How you make partner.
Kind of run a mini law firm within their firm. And it was something that I could really admire. And sometimes the problems they were having were so specific to their one firm that it could be fixed if they went somewhere else. But somehow, even though they were so smart and they were so much better at business development as lawyers than I had been, they didn't understand that the problem they were having wasn't because that's how it is to be a lawyer.
Right.
That's how it is to be a lawyer at that one spot. And I had something to offer that like was valuable to them, which I, at first I was a little hesitant to approach these, you know, esteemed partners with millions of dollars.
Well, were you still with the other guy at that point?
Yeah, I was. And so I started working more and more with partners, and it's a much longer cycle between having that first conversation and placing a partner. And he got nervous about how long some things were taking, and it's more speculative. And I wanted to brand and advertise and really, you know, just focus on that. And he wanted to make sure that those law firm clients were still calling and still.
Yeah, right. That's what he had you for.
Because that's what his bread and butter was. So after a while, it just made more sense to spin off and try my hands at just the one little narrow part of my specialty that I really felt excited about.
Now, his agency was just you and him, or was it bigger?
There were times when we had up to five recruiters, but now it's him and one other person. It ebbs and flows over the years. He was in business about 7 years before I joined him.
Oh, not that long. Okay. Yeah. Was he a lawyer too?
Yeah, he was a former labor and employment lawyer too.
Oh, that's funny.
We had that in common. We were about the same year from school too. You just started earlier.
I got it. That's funny. All right. So so you went out on your own then. This is like 2000. So this is recent though, like a year and a half before the pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah. October 29th, 2018.
Okay.
We celebrated our second
date. Will live in history. That was your second anniversary. Oh, your second anniversary for the business.
Second anniversary of the
middle of COVID.
I know the actual date.
Yeah. Oh boy. Well, I'll tell you something. If you make it through these years, I mean, this everything else will be easy after this.
Well, actually,
you said you placed people like in the middle.
Yeah, I started recruiting during the last downturn of, you know, 2008, 2009. And so I always had that in the back of my mind that a lot of the law firm hiring is cyclical. And even on the in-house side, they put a hold on hiring and they'll hire temps maybe. They don't want to add to their headcount. And, you know, they don't need extra associates at a law firm if they don't have enough work to do, right?
Right, of course.
So I always knew in the back of my mind, like, you know, sometimes if we're really busy with associates, there's going to be a time when it's not really busy. And the partners I work with are a source of revenue for the firm that they go to.
Right. They're bringing books of business.
It's a portable business. They're bringing their clients with them. So there were lots of firms that were seeking those kind of opportunities during the pandemic because it adds revenue to their bottom line. So it's kind of recession proof, which is great. The only thing I was really worried about was whether it could be done remotely. And thankfully it can be.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anybody wants to go back. You told me there's some firms that you know of that have like, you know, ordered their attorneys to come back to work, which I got to believe on the employment law side, there's some risk there, but.
Yeah, you know. I think it's a risky move, but, and I also think if you're a partner with significant portable business, you could probably say no. And
at
some point they're a little nervous about you leaving, but I think it made some partners have a negative feeling about their firm, that they would work at a firm that would do that. And they're not so excited to be part of that firm anymore.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, 90% of our industry is still old school. I mean, we're not business progressive. We might be, you and I, but they're not business progressive people. Most lawyers are bad business. They're not great business people. I mean, because we get no training in that area, you know? No, the partners, I guess, you move up the ranks and you say, oh, now, Jen, it's your turn to be the managing partner. And you learn it by trial by fire, I guess. And you're running the firm. I don't know if you have any more skills than anybody else. I didn't learn anything about business in law school.
I didn't either. And actually, you're right. A lot of the managing partners, it depends on the firm, but sometimes it's the person with the most business. Sometimes it's the person who has some extra time, isn't so busy because it's a very time consuming job. There are some firms where the managing partner is a full-time position and they stop practicing for a little while, but not everybody wants to take the risk of losing their clients during that time. So not everybody would say yes.
Right. Then you have a younger person working your client base. They're getting to know the younger person. Now they're like, who are you, Jen? We don't know you. Yeah.
Exactly.
I remember when I graduated I'm older than you. I graduated in 92 So I remember that the number one book coming out of law school, I was reading like how to start your own law practice, because there wasn't a lot of jobs around and people were getting jobs at $20,000 a year per diem stuff. Wow. And I had never like, I would coming out of law school. It wasn't like run my own law practice. Like, well, why would I do that? You go work for a law firm and then here I am, you know, over years and years. And then I learned that 80% of our profession are solos or small attorneys.
Yeah. I had no idea. I mean, I was at NYU. I graduated in 1996, which is a pretty good year for jobs. I think everyone in my class ended up getting a job by the time it was time to take the bar. And we all thought the be all end all was these big law firms. You know, everybody was trying to get to Cravath or one of those law firms. And, you know, nobody really thought
Dewey
about
Ballantyne. I don't even think they're around anymore, right?
They're not. They became Dewey LaBeouf and then they went out of business.
Right. LaBeouf Lamb, right? They merged. Yeah. And you know, these big firms just implode. That's changed a lot, I think. I think that, I don't know. I knew a lot and more women than men, but I knew a lot of friends who, you know, they were going up the partner track and then they start having kids and then the law firm's like, oh, we want to make you partner, Jen. And by the way, you need to bill what you were billing before and bring in business. And you're like, what do you mean? I want to, like you did, I want to raise my children. And they bowed out, you know, they just forget about it, you know?
I actually think the pandemic is going to make that a little bit better for women. A lot of
there would be more flexibility. You mean
with the firms? A lot of old school partners didn't believe that people would work from home or they could be productive from home. But now everybody was forced; like the entire firm had to work from home for 11 months.
Right.
And most law firms, those really big firms, actually had higher profits in 2020 than 2019.
I know.
And everybody gave up, you know, their commute, and they were able to work on a more flexible schedule. It actually worked better for everyone. So right. I think there might be more opportunity for women or men who have other things they need to do, whether it's take care of an aging parent or take care of children or whatever,
yeah,
to have less than a 5 day a week in the office sort of position so they can stay with it a little
yeah.
bit.
Yeah. Yeah. No question about it. I think that even corporations in-house, things like that, I think you're right. You gained at least 2 hours, right, from commuting, and you can be flexible with what you do. And you know, people, I think that we tend to get like more done when you know you have a shorter period of time. You know, if you know that you got a meeting in 3 hours and you had to have this project done, and you would get it done. But if you had the whole day, yeah, you're sitting there, it would probably take you the whole day. That's like the weirdest thing, but it does. That's what happens, right?
Definitely.
Yeah. So if we talk about, well, let's talk about your business more, right? So how have you been like building your business both during pandemic? Because I know you run your, I said this off the mic, but I know you run your practice, let's call it, right? A little different than other recruiters. You treat it more like a business than other people treat it kind of like a sales position.
Yeah. So I was an English major in college, as I said, and I went straight to a big law firm. And then I went straight from a law firm to working for somebody else's company. So I was a little nervous that I didn't really have a business background because I didn't take any business classes in law school or have any of that kind of interest or knowledge. So I actually joined a coaching program for entrepreneurs right when I started. It was like day 12 of my business.
Really? Like right from the get-go.
A lot of really good support about how to, you know, how to do attraction-based marketing and how to be more visible and how to figure out who my intended target was and how to reach them correctly and that kind of thing. So it was really good. I find that, and you probably know this, lawyers are a little risk adverse.
Yeah, so, tell me about it.
You know, partners are nervous. Like, yeah, it's
well, you got to convince them to jump, right? So it's got to be hard.
I'm never trying to convince someone that they're unhappy, but when someone's unhappy and I feel like it's easily rectifiable, I'm like, you know, it doesn't have to be that way. Like it's not like that at
every other place, right?
It's different for you.
Right. But some people have this thing in their head where, well, I'm unhappy now. What happens if I'm more unhappy there? And they know what this is. They don't know what that is.
Yeah. So and we actually do a lot of almost like career counseling and coaching, because sometimes people are unhappy in a law firm environment and they'd be better off going in-house or to government or teaching or doing something else.
Right.
And every so often it's somebody who just really doesn't like law and they would be better off finding another career. I have some really good coaches I can recommend for that too. But a lot of times people say to me, oh, well, it's just like this to be a lawyer. You know, they wouldn't pay me this much if it didn't suck all the time. And then they name something that's like so easy to fix. All you have to do is be at a firm where it's not that way. And right. I have to convince them a little bit that you don't need a change in career to be happier. You just need a new job. You just need right. to be at a different firm that supports you better and offers you the resources that you're looking for.
Yeah.
So they're all, especially partners who have built up a book of business, you know that there are no non-competes for lawyers. So they can right. move from firm to firm every day if they want to. Right.
You can't force people to work with a different lawyer. Yeah. Yeah.
There are ethical obligations about how the firm and the lawyer tell their clients at the same time.
Right.
And usually if you're the lawyer moving, you want to kind of decide where you're going and lock it down before you make that joint announcement. So they're always nervous that their firm is going to find out that they're moving and the firm would reach out to those clients and offer them a better deal or, you know, take them on a trip to Vegas or do whatever it would
Well, they're not supposed to do that, though. It's not ethical, right? No?
I can't comment on that because I'm not an ethics expert, but I would imagine that firms would want to go to great lengths to keep their clients if they right. knew that they were leaving. And you know, when they make the joint announcement, they're allowed to say, we hope that you'll stay with us. And
right.
we're allowed to say, I hope that you'll come with me. And the client gets to decide.
Right.
So they're so nervous about confidentiality that sometimes they take it a little bit further than you normally would. I mean, they're not in the CIA, they're lawyers
right.
they're trying to move their clients. So they're so nervous all the time that it takes them a lot of exposure to me before they trust that I'm not going to violate their confidentiality and cause them to lose their job or their clients. So we do I do a lot of networking. We do a lot of referral marketing. I do a lot of LinkedIn reach out and we do a lot of LinkedIn content. We have a blog that goes out every week. We have a lot of different things going on. And every time I work with a candidate, they'll say, oh, I got your email that you sent and I put it in my drawer. I wasn't ready yet. And then I connected with you on LinkedIn and I followed your post for a while. And then, yeah, now I'm ready. Or right. I met you at this event and I kept it in the back of my mind, but I was pretty happy then and I remembered. And so I looked this up and I saw your website. Or so it's generally a combination of ways that everybody finds us. So I actually right. use a marketing company who I was fortunate to find. They were at one time in-house with a firm that I did some work with and they went out on their own about the same time I did. And they are really good at working with law firms because, you know, they worked in-house at a law firm and their specialty area is working with small firms and medium-sized firms. And so they know how to talk to lawyers. So they're able to do some of the content for me without even involving me. And then some of it we collaborate on and they're able to make it so that I could be a little bit more ubiquitous and be posting on LinkedIn every day and sending right. newsletter and doing some things that I might not otherwise have time for.
Right. Well, it's all top of mind, right? So if you're everywhere, which I do see you everywhere pretty much, you know, think it's hard not to think of you. I hope I'm kind of fitting in that category. I mean, I do the podcast, but I'm getting to the point where I'm redoing my website and I'm going to be doing more blogging and stuff to go. I'm going to kind of create the personal brand and the law firm over here. And then they kind of interact because one was getting kind of lost in the other's message, you know? But that's always a struggle. I mean, it's always difficult to keep top of mind of people because there's a lot of competition and people don't necessarily remember exactly what you do, right? They know you're a legal recruiter. So, you know, I'm sure people call you all the time. You're like, well, I don't really do that. I'll refer you to this person, right?
Yeah, well, I have a pretty good referral network for that, but I do find we're still trying to tweak our messaging a little because we are candidate facing. We work only with partners or groups or small firms that wish to be at a law firm, not people who want to go in-house or to do a different job as a lawyer. And we only work with the partner level people who have their own business to move, because that's what makes them so attractive to the next firm. So that's why they have the entire market available to them. That's why we can be candidate facing, and there doesn't have to be a firm that's in the market for, you know, a corporate partner with $1 million of business, because in New Jersey, $1 million of business gets you a meeting with everywhere you want to go.
Right. That's a lot of business.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000. That's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
For New Jersey, that's a lot of business. Right. In New York, at some of those bigger firms, $5 million is the starting conversation. And I do a lot of work in South Florida too. And it's a little bit higher than New Jersey, but not much. So, I mean, but there are smaller firms where they'd be happy to have people who have more modest books of business. And I've spent a lot of time learning what all of the options are. And, you know, the partners that I work with are pretty well connected. A lot of times they know people at various firms, but I always tell them that, you know, it's my job to know the entire landscape, and I have access to information that they may not, because they know the firms where they've had a case against them or they have a friend there or whatever.
Right.
And also it puts you in a much stronger negotiating position to have me say, hey, you know, Mitch would be terrific over here. He's so happy on his own. I doubt he would even think about it, but maybe I could get him to have a cup of coffee with you. I think he would really fit in really well, you know, but I don't know. You're going to have to really convince him.
A little bit of a setup.
Yeah. And then, you know, and then when it's time to negotiate compensation, it's okay for me to ask for everything you want. But when you ask for it, either you ask for everything you want and you might sound a little greedy, or you don't want to sound greedy, so you don't ask for everything you want. And then you're kind of resentful that you didn't get the package.
I should ask for more. They agreed too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not just the money. They want a certain budget or a certain title or a certain marketing professional, or they want to do some staffing or hiring. And, you know, there are a lot of different things that it's easier to have a third party ask for on your behalf.
Now, who pays you?
The firm that they join.
Oh, they do.
It's an industry standard amount. So even if I wasn't ethical and tried to make the best match possible every single time, like I really, really do, there would be no reason for me to push one firm over the other, because my fee is always the same.
So everybody knows. And it's standard with larger firms where they... Mm-hmm. Now, what happens when you're dealing with a small firm? Maybe you're merging two firms or bringing like a small department with another smaller firm.
Yeah, every so often we're working things out for the first time, but I have a standard agreement that I share with even smaller firms. And, you know, if it's outside of what they've allocated for recruiting, sometimes we talk about it. But, you know, I really do like helping the partners I work with. And, you know, I'm not in it to lose money, but if the only way that this partner can find the best home is to join a smaller firm that needs to tweak the agreement a little, we're sometimes open to that.
Very good. So what is going on like in the legal profession that you're seeing? Is there certain industries, practice areas that are, you know, moving around a little bit, or there's no trends, anything with COVID or stuff?
Yeah, well, unfortunately for the more general economy, bankruptcy is really hot.
Really? Because I thought bankruptcy is kind of quiet right now, no?
Well, there's a lot of hiring going on in bankruptcy.
Okay, they're gearing up.
Chapter 11s being filed.
Okay.
And so anybody who has a debtor practice or anybody whose focus is just on Chapter 11 is a little bit sought after right now.
That's corporate bankruptcies.
Yes, that's corporate bankruptcy. And a lot of firms are staffing up because the economy was really good for a long time and they may not have grown their bankruptcy groups as much as they needed to for this point. And so they're... I'm working with some bankruptcy attorneys who like, this is their moment in the sun. They feel like they've been overlooked for a while and they've been not mistreated, but kind of ignored a little bit and not gotten everything they want at their firms. And
yeah, but there was plenty of bankruptcy back in 08, 08, 09, right. 2010. Right. So there was a feeding frenzy then too.
Right. But you know, it's a little bit of a cyclical practice. So they've been ignored a little bit for a while. And now they're feeling like, you know, the prom king and queen that everybody wants them. And I am working with some bankruptcy attorneys that are getting multiple offers pretty quickly. And that's nice. Labor and employment is also really hot. When I was a labor and employment lawyer, it was the slow and steady practice because it was kind of recession proof. When it was a bad economy, there were more rifts and more litigations. When it was a good economy, there was more training and more deals and more people being hired. But now it's some of everything. So there are a lot of companies need return to work or remote work advice. And then there are a lot of, unfortunately, there are companies that had to do furloughs or rifts.
Right.
Some of those people are suing. So there's some litigation going on. And so they're being very sought after. And cybersecurity lawyers are very much in demand because of all the working from home. There have been some breaches and that's been
everybody's an issue. Online.
And sadly, family lawyers, divorce lawyers.
Divorce is definitely up. Yeah, no question about it. Well, you spend that much time with your spouse, you're fine. You're starting to like, oh, maybe this isn't right. It was good when we weren't seeing each other every day.
But what I find to be really encouraging is corporate law is very busy now. And that's kind of usually an indicator that the economy is not as
bad. There's definitely companies being formed, merged.
Yeah.
I got deals, people sending me agreements to look at. Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's definitely, I think maybe the PPP loans and everything and maybe the new wave of money helped. I don't know long-term if it's going to be a negative impact, but right now there are, you know, there's pockets, certain industries that are really getting crushed, right? That if you're a dry cleaner.
Hospitality and.
Yeah. Hotel. Hospitality, restaurants, especially if you're small.
Rent planners, a lot of.
Yeah, they're getting crushed too. Right. Yeah, but if you're a huge hotel chain or whatever, you may be posting a loss this year or struggling, but you'll come back. You know, the cruise ships aren't going out of business, but a lot of people there lost their jobs.
So I'm keeping my dry cleaner in business. The first week,
are you? How you doing that?
I wore my regular work clothes, and we have pickup and delivery because we started using a dry cleaner when we were commuting into the city, and we couldn't make it to the dry cleaner while they were open here. And we liked them, so we kept using them. And the first time we left out our dry cleaning, and they came around to collect it, they called and gave us a heartfelt thanks because we were the only customers who had dry cleaning.
Right.
They kept giving me all these really friendly, nice texts like, "Thank you so much for being a supportive customer."
Right.
So I've all 11 months of the pandemic, Monday through Friday, I get dressed in my work clothes.
Do you really?
The dry cleaner because they're a small business too.
Right. Well, that's very generous. It's like funny because they're thanking you for wearing clothes. That's basically what they're thanking you for. You know,
get them dirty.
I mean, my dry cleaner, I go every couple of weeks now. I used to go and with a smaller bag of stuff, mostly shirts. I don't have. Today I'm wearing jeans. I don't have any need to wear. I was wearing pants for a while. Then I'm like, why am I doing that? I'm not seeing anybody.
I usually wear stockings and shoes too.
You're kidding.
For me, it's like a mindset issue.
Yeah, that's true.
I actually kicked my shoes off under my desk today.
Yeah, we won't tell anybody.
I have a lot of calls, but I am wearing a dress and a necklace and stockings. And like, that is what I do every day because I find it puts me more in the mind to work. But when I got all those nice messages from the dry cleaner, I was like, well, maybe this is a small way that I can help.
Right. Exactly. Well, I think that's what happened when the first two or three weeks of the pandemic, I'm on my couch in my pajamas. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to fall apart. I can't do this. So I did start getting up every morning, putting, you know, washing up, putting on a shirt. I mean, you know, we go on some of these Zoom chats and there's people like in t-shirts with the neck pulled down. You know what I mean? That commercial where the half washed, yeah. Right? Exactly. Right. I'm like, come on, you can't even put a shirt on. You can be in your underwear. We don't care. But yeah, I don't look, I think it's the same way. Like as you, you got to have a mindset to pretend like life is continuing, you know, it hasn't stopped. Now, did you have an office before this?
I did. And my lease was up on June 1st and they actually had to close on March 13th, like a lot of indoor right. places. And they called me in late May to tell me that they were going to reopen. And I said, oh, that's great. I'm looking forward to coming back. But what kind of precautions are you taking for COVID?
Yeah, there were none then, right?
And they said, oh, well, the building gets cleaned once a week. It's like, well, that,
what about the other 4 days?
And, you know, I had a private office in a suite of other offices.
Was it a shared space? Like I'm in a co-working space.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It was like that. So, I mean, my office was private, but I had to touch two different keypads and doorknobs to get into it. And there was an accountant and an executive coach and a family therapist that were seeing people coming in and out as part of my suite. And I don't know who's coming in and out. Are you like, do you have Purell? Are you taking temperatures? Or are they signing in? Like, and the guy was like, well, you could bring Purell, I guess.
Oh God.
And so he was like, you know, somebody else looked at your space.
Like they can have it.
Well, I think that maybe you should go with that.
Right. But so now you're basically a virtual company. You don't need brick and mortar.
I am completely virtual. And right. I never built out my home office before. Like when I worked from home, I would sit with my laptop on the couch or at the kitchen table or something because I had an office. And when I was going to really do work, I would go to the office. But now that I don't have an office, I finally, like I have my setup and I have my files and everything. And I wonder, I mean, I'm sure there will be a time when I would like to have an office again, but it doesn't need to be right away.
Do clients come to your office? Rarely, right?
I made them come to my office because I was in downtown Westfield and I thought it would be fun to have them come and look at paperwork and then I would take them out for lunch or dinner and whatever, but it's not necessary.
Right. So you really don't. And I know you have some VAs, right? Virtual staff. And
yeah. So I have an operations manager. She's now a full-time employee for me. And
she works from home, right?
She works from home. She actually ran a whole VA business from her home for many years. She's used to working from home. And I have a new recruiter who's virtual from a different state. So I have somebody in
That's
Pennsylvania.
That's Tina.
Yeah, Tina.
So Aaron and Tina.
And Aaron's in Pennsylvania.
Oh.
And my marketing people are in a different place in Pennsylvania.
Right. Yes.
So, and you really don't need to... And think about it, and all the virtual networking that the two of us have done, like I feel that I've made actual friends that I'll keep in touch with.
Of course.
But I've been counting on there's so many that I've never met in person.
No, I haven't met any of them in person. You and I've met in person, and Chris had introduced us. We have coffee together. Yeah. But yeah, I haven't seen people in person. I mean, I haven't seen Darielle. I haven't seen Jean. I haven't seen anybody since last March, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, my standard is once I made it through like the first few months and didn't get COVID, I was determined not to get it. So
yeah, I don't blame you.
I feel like it's like 11 months later, I would be mad if like I was so careful.
Like and broke I the streak.
So I say to people sometimes when they're like, oh, let's meet in person. I'm like, I love you, but not enough to have COVID for you.
No, not until everyone's vaccinated. That's been my next discussion is like, let's say my parents get vaccinated. They're scheduled to get vaccinated. So Passover is late March, right? My son's coming home from college. Should we get together? They're saying that they could be carriers, even though they won't get COVID. Then we might get COVID.
My mom was just talking to me about that. I actually have a milestone birthday and I'm not doing anything because I was supposed to go on a trip with my best friend who has a birthday 3 days from mine.
Okay.
And I was supposed to throw a big party. We already chose the caterer and neither one of those things is happening. So my mom said, well, I just had my second vaccine. She had it a few days ago. Maybe I'll come over because she hasn't been inside her house. We
right. Neither are my parents. Right.
And, you know, once in a while she runs in to use the restroom or something, but right. like you visit outside yeah. and you know, that's it. And she said, well, I've been vaccinated. I wonder if it means it's safe for me to come into your house. One of my kids is all virtual now, and my other child is at school, hybrid, 2 days a week. So right. She's always worried, well, Jacob's been at school. I don't know what he's been exposed
to. But she doesn't have a problem. Yeah, the one she's vaccinated.
But she says it's only 70% effective.
It is? That feels like 90% effective.
I don't know. She was going to do some more Google research.
Yeah. I also think that I've heard that if you, I think it's pretty true though, that she could be a carrier. I don't know where she's going, but she's but I also, yeah, right. Neither do my parents. So that's not an issue. But I think if they do get it, I think it would be a lot less. It's like when you had the chickenpox vaccination, you could get the chickenpox, but it'd be very mild. But you know, what's mild COVID in your 70 something years old, my parents are.
My mom is actually in very good health and is, you know, she works out every day. She
yeah.
has a really healthy diet. So like, hopefully if she did get sick, she would
be okay.
Be okay. But no one wants to chance that.
Yeah, exactly. That's, I don't know. Well, we'll see how it played out. Biden even said, you know, I think by December we'll all be in good shape, but don't hold me to that.
That's what we were saying in our house. Everybody kept saying April and May, and we were like, probably by January, we're all going to be vaccinated.
Right. I thought that things wouldn't really be going until the summer, which it sounds like is what's happening. Yeah. Look, even today, a lot of vaccination sites closed up here because of the storm. And then you got to get rescheduled. You don't just do it the next day. They're already booked. So you got to get rescheduled. I mean, the whole thing is just.
And then a lot of them, you know, they had to leave all the doors and windows open. And so they would close if it got too cold.
Yeah. It doesn't help.
That means all winter you're in danger of having your appointment canceled because we've had so much snow and so many cold days.
Now, are both your kids in the high school like mine, my girls?
No, I have one at the high school who decided to go virtual.
Right.
That everybody kept getting COVID and she was done.
Right. And the windows are open, right?
Yeah. She said it was freezing.
Yeah. That's what my girl said.
Two teachers that were teaching virtually, even though she was in the classroom. So yeah. She said, forget it. Most of her friends are virtual now, but my son is at the middle school and he really likes to be in person. So he's still going
2 days a week.
Although yeah. My kid. Today,
no.
They called it off today.
They called it a virtual. Well, you know, the funny thing is my kids would go. So my older one was virtual, my senior. Aylin, who's a freshman, she was going hybrid. You would get to class. I think your kids told you this. You would get to class. You'd have the laptop in front of you. You'd take your earbuds off, ask a question, put the earbuds back on so you could hear the whole thing. I was just stupid. So I said, well, you might as well be home.
Yeah.
Now they get up at 7:25 and at 7:30, she's in their class.
Yeah. No, we let them decide. They're both very good, very self-motivated students. We didn't want to get in their way of how they learn. And my daughter really wanted to be at home and my son really wanted to be at school. And so that's what they're doing for the time being. We'll see what happens.
I don't know if we've handled it better than other schools. I know I have friends around the country that you're able to decide whether you go hybrid that week or whatever. We have to like give them like a whole semester's notice, right?
Well, they were getting mad because more people kept going virtual and they didn't, the teachers are mad because they have to come and be freezing to teach to like three kids. I guess they were trying to motivate people to choose hybrid. And I guess it worked with some and not with others.
Well, look, that's what's going to be standing in the way. I know we're off the topic, but that's what's going to be standing in the way of going back. Everyone going back is the teachers. You know, maybe you care for an elderly person at home or whatever your reason is. And you're like, I don't want to be exposed to every one of these kids. Even though they're, you know, maybe they're vaccinated, but they might be carrying the thing. I don't know. So until they're vaccinated, I don't see this getting.
Well, so far, there's no vaccine that's approved for kids, right?
No, not under 17, I think, or 18.
Yeah. So, you know, so the kids can't even be vaccinated.
Right. But that's, I think they're less likely to, I mean, they can get it and they can be sick, but I think it's a very low rate. That doesn't mean that that's a good thing.
I think they can pass it around.
They can definitely pass it around.
They certainly passed it around the high school a few times already.
Well, I can just say thank goodness for the Gilman Strategic Group Zoom networking. Because we stay in touch with everybody now. I Zoom with you to Florida one day. You weren't on London today, but
I couldn't because I was doing a special LinkedIn training. But I'll be back.
It was a small group. We only had like 8 or 10.
Oh, I sent her a note ahead of time to let her know it was my last week of. I was doing a LinkedIn training intensive, but intensive. I was really lucky because that coaching program that I joined on the 12th day that I was in business, I moved up to the second level where you leverage your business. That's where you figure out what you can offload to a VA or an employee or whatever and grow a little bit more. And we had quarterly meetings that were in person in Stamford, Connecticut. And I was deciding, should I go or should I not go? I was at my last meeting on March 8th and 9th. I went on Amtrak.
Things shut down like the 11th, didn't they?
Things shut down on the 13th, I could tell you, because I was at a meeting when they shut down.
Oh, really? You're like, Jen, you shouldn't be there.
But so it was really good to be there because the coach said, okay, let's talk about how we're going to move online. And I said, well, I can't do that for my business. I meet every candidate and every client in person. I pride myself on that. I've never sent somebody to a meeting unless I've met them. And she said, okay, well, we're probably going to have a shutdown in a few days.
Right, so that is not going to work for you anymore.
So, you know, what I said, well, they're talking about it's 2 weeks. She said, well, let's say it's 3 weeks or 4 weeks. I mean, you don't want to lose momentum in your business. Maybe you should think about it. You know, Zoom's pretty good. And I was thinking
that
about
was the catalyst.
And I got home and they were talking a little bit more. And I was at a meeting at a law firm in the conference room of a law firm on Friday, March 13th. And we're all sitting around the table and everyone's joking around like, oh, can't shake hands, you know, coronavirus. And then we all get a text on our phones almost at the same time from all the different schools. You got to pick up your kid. We're shutting down.
I remember that. Right. Yeah. It was nuts. Hey, were you in New Jersey at that point?
I was in New Jersey, but I was at least a half hour from home. Oh. And thankfully my husband he went into the city on Wednesday, March 11th to collect his stuff. Just in case there was a shutdown.
Yeah, because they're already talking about it.
Decided not to go in because you know, there was that lawyer who the T&E lawyer who lived in Westchester. He went to a conference, and there's a conference in Florida that if you're a real T&E lawyer.
Yeah, it's the Heckerling Institute. Yeah, okay. I used to go to it. Yeah.
So he went and then he came back to his office and he
brought coronavirus
at his office and it went around and you know. There were cases in my husband's building.
Yeah.
So we were like, you know, maybe you work from home for a couple of days. So he was home and he got the kids. But the next week, you know, we got our groceries and we made sure we had whatever we needed. And then I called Erin on Tuesday. I was like, okay, now I'm bored. Let's look into that Zoom thing that Fabienne was talking about.
She was already working for you at that point?
Yeah, she was already working for me. She was a VA. She wasn't
Yeah, you hired her company basically to work for you. Right.
Yeah. And she, you know, she said, oh yeah, I'll look into Zoom. And we were lucky enough. I mean, if I hadn't had Erin, it would have taken me a long time because I'm not tech savvy. And she did a lot of background work, putting together a list and sending out emails and setting it up and whatever. But we started on the second Tuesday.
Yeah, it was right away. I remember.
It was March 24th. We're coming up on, we're going to plan a 1 year anniversary event on Zoom.
That's good. Well, you had your 100th. I remember that.
So. We had our 100th event. Yeah, in November. Yeah. And now March 24th is a Wednesday. We're having a special pop-up evening event to celebrate 1 year of a lot of the same people, really.
Yeah. No, I saw that one.
It's been nice. We've made some real friends and business contacts that I hope to stay in touch with even when things go back.
Yeah. So you think all this Zoom meetings that you've run has helped your business?
I'm not sure.
Indirectly, maybe.
It created some goodwill. I think everybody really liked the group that we put together and they had fun and it kept them busy and I guess more in the game, you know,
yeah.
A lot of people that weren't doing anything and it was depressing to be following the news and seeing the numbers and everything was terrible.
Yeah.
And at least we were making new connections and trying to grow our business. And I think people were happy that there was that kind of container for it.
Yeah. Well, it was definitely a charitable thing that you did, but because a lot of the people that we meet, I don't look at them as necessarily being people that can get you access to the people you're looking to connect with, but you never know. I mean, you know.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to know. And it helps to have the marketing person I work with calls them raving fans. So the people who are in our networking group, especially the ones that come all the time, are the ones that are willing to show up at an event or like a post on LinkedIn or introduce me to someone if there's someone they know. And I'm sure that can't hurt.
Okay. So I know I've had you on the microphone for almost an hour now.
Sorry. I've taken so much of your time.
No, not my time. This is all for you. So here's the question. So you're an entrepreneur. This is the Accidental Entrepreneur. You started your business from scratch. What kind of advice would you give to people if they're getting started in their business? You know, maybe they're leaving their company and they're starting their business, whatever industry. What kind of advice would you give to them from your experiences?
I would tell them to go for it. I wavered and I thought about it for a long time, and I probably should have done it a little bit earlier. I was a little bit nervous about taking the risk to start my own business, but it's so much more rewarding. I don't mind putting in longer hours because I am growing something that's mine that I can leave to my family my kids are even, my son was, I overheard him talking to his friend. He's like, my mom owns her own company.
There you go. You're like, that's what I want to hear. Yeah, exactly. And I also think it's good advice what you did at the beginning, which was you immediately invested in yourself. You immediately got into a place where you could learn from professionals. And a lot of people don't do that. They wait, or they kind of circle the wagons and they read a book and they go to a group and they don't really. And sometimes they can't, you know, they don't have the money to do it. But I think people should invest in themselves sooner than later.
Alternatives. I mean, I'm in a more expensive program, but there are some lower cost alternatives. I'm in some mastermind groups that are free. Yeah. There are some events that are very instructional and informational where you can pay just to go to that one event. I do pumpkin plan coaching with a private coach now, which is a nice add-on for our business, but there's always a way. And I think that
good advice, always a way.
Investing in yourself comes back to you at least tenfold. Instead of floundering around for years, you can get going on your business.
Yeah. I mean, we're always sharing books and people and groups and, you know, whatever it is, Audible, reading books, things like that. So that's always good stuff. All right. Well, I very much appreciate it. We'll put in the show notes how people can get in touch with you, how they can learn about your groups, all those types of things.
We'd be happy to have anybody who wants to join us for networking. And if you can put in the notes, we're also running a confidential Q&A webinar every month for lawyers who are a little bit nervous that somebody might think they're leaving, but have some questions.
Okay,
it's
great.
Totally confidential. They can submit questions. We won't identify them whether they're on the webinar or not on the webinar.
And
hopefully it's helpful.
These are people that are thinking maybe...
Yeah, they're a little bit curious or have some questions, but aren't ready to get on the phone with me because they think it's going to be a hard sell, which it's not. A lot of times I tell people to stay where they are.
Yeah, you're a real threatening salesperson. They should really be nervous.
I just get very enthusiastic if I think I can help someone, but there are definitely people that are at the right place already. And sometimes it makes them feel better about working there if they understand that that's actually a good spot for them.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.